You are listening to the Crimes of Long Island podcast. Hello, you are listening to the Crimes of Long Island podcast. I'm on with my co-host, Lindsay. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm good. Marv, I could listen to your voice forever.
Well, it's a good thing you're listening to this podcast.
That's true.
Thank you. That's so nice of you to say. My wife, on the other hand, is like, shut up!
Well, you know.
No. So, we are talking about something, a particular case that is very personal. We just spoke for about 20 minutes about our fears and tensions about approaching this subject that has been around for my entire adult life, really. And this is a very new case to you.
It is new to me. Not only that, this morning when my son and I, we started going for walks in the morning, and we walked all the way over to Horton Road where this all takes place.
You see the little statue, right?
Yeah.
On the bench, yeah.
It hits, you grew up with it your whole life. It hits, you know, it's relatively close to home, although everything on Long Island is, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
People are not happy that we're talking about it.
People will be pleasantly surprised when they get to the middle of this podcast and they're like, oh, I can't listen to these two anymore.
And then they turn it off?
Yeah, but they'll be like, oh, if that guy talks one more time, can anybody be more nasal? I'm very self-critical.
The community in which this happened, which is Valley Stream, which is essentially the, I don't know if it's technically, but it's like the five towns, South Shore of Long Island.
It's like Lynbrook in that sense because, you know, it's the surrounding towns to the five towns.
Right. And so there, I don't know what the five towns are. I keep forgetting.
Inwood, Lawrence, Cedarhurst, Woodmere, and Hewlett.
Gotcha. All right, I'll forget tomorrow.
I grew up here. I remember that. It's embedded in my head.
This is true. You know, one thing that was said to me was like, I just don't see why there needs to be another true crime podcast about her. Her being Kellyanne Tinyas, and she, has become like a Greek goddess or to this town, but. In like, for so many reasons, you know, it's recently on July 11th, there was a memorial built in the local park, Grant Park, honoring the life of Kellyanne Tinyas. And it was unveiled and there was a ceremony.
And Kathleen Rice was involved. I believe she was the DA when this was all being dealt with back in the
80s. She was not.
No, really?
But when she became DA, she reopened the case in 2013.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It was as a testament to the love and support of the community. Everyone constantly talks about how beautiful and wonderful she was. Mm-hmm. And I did give this comment a lot of thought. Why does there have to be another true crime podcast? Well, a couple of things.
Do you mean the coverage of the case or the entire show?
Case.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a psychologist and kind of smart, and Mark's kind of smart-ish, too.
I think you're a bit smarter. I'll give you that.
But I think I can bring something unique to this. I also think that having been a 13-year-old girl, you know, and having a daughter, this tale has become a cautionary tale because I've done stupid things, you know, growing up, and most kids do. I've never killed someone savagely, but we grow up and we grow up, hopefully, our parents raise us to grow up in a trusting, you know, environment while knowing how to keep your, you know, themselves.
I think I know what you mean. It's one of these things where we've all, you know, I hate to even say these things. We've all gotten into the car that we shouldn't have gotten into.
Exactly.
We've all hung out with that guy who's a bit little shady, and you end up in the middle of a weird part of Manhattan or something. And it's, we put ourselves in situations as youth And we look back and we're like, wow, you get this internal belief of the possibility of guardian angels in some ways.
Sure, absolutely. I've definitely done stupid things, and yeah. I've definitely gotten into a car with a guy I barely knew. And, you know, we make decisions based on where we are, what our parents have taught us, what our peers have taught us, and I sort of pray my children grow up now that I look back and, you know.
Oh, it's horrifying, right? I mean, it's
absolutely
crazy.
It's really scary, and, you know. Even before I was sort of cautioned about or told not to do this podcast, I texted you or reached out to you several times. I was like, I am struggling with this one. Like,
yeah.
Like this girl she looks like me. I mean, in terms of like the hair, as I showed you a picture, you know, but, she's constantly being identified as beautiful. So, obviously she looks like me, just kidding. but you know, I felt it as a mom. I felt it as,
you do have a similarity though. Like you posted a picture of yourself when you're about this age and
right?
You have this, you have a similar look, you know, in the sense of like, you know, I don't remember the fashions for 13-year-olds, in 1989, I was, a few years older than right. Kelly was, but I could have put Kelly right next to you in that photo with
right.
your other friend, and you know there wouldn't be a question. You know, it would have been just like, all right, these two people really enjoy their hairspray.
I did enjoy my bangs, but like, you know, I just every time I looked at her photo, I was just like, oh, you know, and I have a younger brother, and you know, Mark and I are going to do our best to hold everyone accountable that should be held accountable. And,
you know who I want to hold accountable? And this is a little
a
bit,
murderer?
No, this is a little bit nasty. This, all of the podcasts I listen to, all of the YouTube video stars who cover this case and they
yeah.
do a complete shit job. Those are the people I want to hold accountable. People who are just going out there with misinformation
yes.
and just garbage. And I'm going to say it's about 75% of what I came across.
I
the other
agree.
25%, pretty damn good. Pretty,
which is,
pretty in,
which,
you know, informative.
Which is why I said, real quick, special thanks to True Crime Brewery Podcast.
Well, what was that?
True Crime Brewery Podcast.
I'm going to bleep it out anyway. I'm not sponsored. No, I'm not going to give them a plug.
No,
I'm just kidding, of course. No. I listen to the same one.
Throw them a wave. Maybe they'll wave
no.
back.
Good podcast, definitely.
Yeah, it is good. And especially good was like I had 50 questions on my like to-do list of what to investigate next. And some of them were just on names or dates or, you know. And they got me every name I needed.
I enjoyed them. I subscribed to their channel. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And I found that they got into a couple little tiny arguments. And I was like, all right, this is for real. Like, this is a real discussion going on between these two people. And it's not like this, like, formulaic script that so many
right.
of these shows are,
right.
which is what that 75% are.
I agree, and we obviously, you know, we have a general idea, but then we wing it on our comments, and one day we're going to get into a big argument, and that's going to draw blood.
So. We've already done that, though, off air, and I think that's why, you know, we have a pretty good rapport, I think.
I agree.
Well, thanks a lot for listening to this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for listening to 20 Minutes of Us talking about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
All right, let's rip off the Band-Aid.
Well, I do want to talk about just a couple of... Woo! What other things having to do with the period of time? So, just to kind of set the tone.
Yes.
I don't know if you were listening to modern music at that time, but of course George H.W. Bush was the president at the time this all happened. The top five music, you know, all songs were like "Lost in Your Eyes" by Debbie Gibson. You have Sheena yeah. Easton and Paul Abdul and Mike and the Mechanics and New Kids on the Block. So clearly, it's not a great time for music, right? Not in my eyes.
Madonna.
But that's the top five, you know. Okay. So the top five for this particular week that this heinous, terrible situation happened, those are the things. It happened in March, in the beginning of March. The day that this happened, it was cloudy out. It had a high of 43 degrees. It had a low of 34 degrees. And there was no, like, rain. There was no anything. It was just a dry day. So that's the tone of the day. It's like your standard blah winter day, right?
By the way, that helps a lot because when my son and I were going on our walk and I was mentioning the ice skating rink, he's like, you should look up what the weather was like that day. I was like, where am I ever going to find that?
So that's what triggered my little finding out the information. And so, yeah, I think it's important to realize that in some ways. It at least sets a visual for the entire day.
Also, to this day, that neighborhood, there's constantly kids outside.
Is there really? I mean, that's good. I mean, people, this shocked, I don't know, outside of New York, but this certainly shocked my area, which was like Cedarhurst. So when we heard about this, and I went to Lawrence High School, I was in 10th grade, and it was one of these things. It was shocking. I was friends with people in the high school at the time. So it really, I was connected on some level. Of course, I didn't know Kelly, but I definitely knew people who knew her or knew of her. It was very close, and it really, really upset the entire District 14 and 15, I'm going to say.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this is when you were calling the favorite radio station multiple times to try to get them to play your favorite song or to win something. So it was... It was really so long ago.
Play Lost in Your Eyes again.
One time I sang a Madonna song to a boy that I was dating for 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you wearing that dress?
No, and I can't. It was not like a virgin. I can't remember what it was.
I'm sorry, you weren't what? No. I'm just kidding. All right. If we don't tell a few jokes here and there, just for, you know, people who might be new to this podcast.
It's really tough.
Yeah. Lindsay will start weeping, then I'll weep, and the next thing you know, we're just going to end it. I mean,
and then Mark's going to cry at me for weeping, and it's going to be ugh. Yeah, or yell at me, whatever.
And I'm a damn ugly crier, so it's just not worth it. And yeah, so if we tell a joke here, we're not laughing at this thing. We're trying to keep our spirits slightly high so that we can get through this.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, let's do it, Mark.
All right, do you want me to start this little...
Start it up.
All right, yeah. So it's Friday, March 3rd, 1989. I'm not going to give her exact address. If people are interested, you know, they can look it up. We know that it's Horton Road in the Gibson area of Valley Stream.
Yeah.
It's part of the Hewlett-Woodmere School District, and Kelly went to the Woodmere Middle School, where we both have children who attend there. So that is also crazy. You know,
exactly. And our children are also going into eighth grade, if I can say.
Crazy. I mean, it's the exact period of time where our kids are kind of growing up and, woo, you know, it's wild. So Kelly is picked up by her father, I learned. And every day her father picks her up, brings her home. She babysits her 8-year-old brother, Richie.
Wait, can I just say?
Sure.
Her father picks her up to make sure she's safe. That was a knife through my heart.
Oh, I'd see. I didn't know that. Did I write that?
No, I found it somewhere. And additionally living in the house, by the way, is Grandpa, who is
I didn't know that. You know what? I read that she took care of her grandparents or grandparent. Right. I did not know that he also lived in the house.
Yep, I got this from the beer podcast, too. Grandpa and Grandma were both living in the house, so that house was pretty packed.
Sure.
But Grandma had Alzheimer's. I'm not sure if she was home that day or at, you know, day treatment thing.
Sure.
And Grandpa, at this point, was out of the house because he was definitely in either getting treatment or in his last stages. So that's why Dad picked her up.
That can also be very stressful for a kid. I mean, Kelly is the oldest, right? Is she the old? Yeah. So, I mean, she's kind of, you know, she has a lot of responsibility for a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can also imagine, you know, you want to get out of the house every once in a while. So, yeah, I know the allure of this, as we both said, that we both kind of understand the allure of wanting to do the wrong thing.
Right. And Kelly, unbeknownst to Kelly, her friends have actually planned a special surprise birthday party for her that begins with ice skating and then a sleepover at one of her friend's house. So.
I think it was for that night.
It was, yes, it was.
And I believe her birthday is March 5th, so it's only in 2 days. She's going to turn 14, pretty big milestone for a young girl. And you're lucky enough for your birthday to land on a weekend. There's a lot of things to look forward to here.
Right, right. So dad drops her off. The phone rings. Richie Jr. picks it up, who is 8. And a, quote, man who identifies himself as John asks to speak to Kellyanne. I have a lot of problems with this. Like, I did not think the Golubs were a family who emphasized proper phone manners.
Hmm.
Also, it changes as to whether, reports change as to whether he identified himself as John Golub or just John. And if Kelly and John were speaking as often as possible, why would he identify himself, you know, as John Golub? I wonder if that was just something that changed.
I don't know Richie Jr. I don't know how mature of an 8-year-old he was, but I'm going to guess that he doesn't remember this really happening. He kind of remembers that he was told that it happened, and his memory exists because he was told what happened. I'm not saying that he made it up.
No. I think someone said John. I just don't believe they said Golub, because, I mean, if my daughter called, she would say, hi, this is, I mean, she wouldn't, but after I beat it into her, she'd say, hi, this is Alexis. Can I please speak to you?
Really? Yeah. I mean, my kid has no social skills whatsoever when it comes to phone. I mean, it's like, I hear him and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And his friends are worse. So it's just, yeah. You know, maybe that's also today's culture versus, I mean, phones were such a big deal when we were kids, right?
Right, but also, like, you can see who's calling. You don't have to say it. It's just that when my son was younger, he didn't have a cell phone, and he and a friend used to call each other on the home lines, and that's when we drilled it into them. But they'll never have to do that again, thanks to cell phones.
I think that we had caller ID at this time. I know we had call waiting by this time, but, I mean, I don't – yeah, I'm not really sure.
I don't think we had caller ID in 89.
I'm pretty sure we did. But, I mean, it's beside the point. They – probably didn't, because we would have heard about it, but we did get right. Phone records to confirm that call did come from the Golub house.
Right. And so after a brief exchange on the phone, Kelly tells her brother she needs to go to her friend's house. I think the friend's name is Nicole. And then at around 2:30, this is where the time's a little sketchy here, especially because Mark and I know when school ends at which school. And I feel like some of these people had to fly home, mm-hmm. You know.
I guess the times could have changed over the years, right?
I thought of that too, yeah. So Kelly's like, don't worry, Richie, I'll be right back. And she leaves, and Richie apparently waits all of 5 minutes, which again, who knows how long Richie waited, but I believe he waited 5 minutes because he's 8, you know.
I know that when I was 8, I would be all like nervous, like, what do you mean I'm all alone? You know, grandpa's going to tell me weird stuff.
Right. And now,
is grandpa and grandma home? Like, that changes everything.
Grandpa's definitely not home.
Oh, okay.
Grandma might be home, but even if she is, yeah, she has Alzheimer's, so she's not exactly babysitting material. Yeah.
But you know what? She is just running down the street. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's not a great choice, but it is right down the street.
It's 4 or 5 houses down, something I couldn't remember. But also, every kid is on the street on this. Like, apparently, everyone went outside. Like, it was.
Yeah, like, oh my God.
Like, it's like the Truman Show or something, or, you know.
You do not need the Nest ring bell. On Horton Avenue.
No, you didn't. Because every child is either in the street or watching the street. They go, you know, plus it's Nicole's house was also on the street. And then, it was just a house on the street. It was just one or two more houses down or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, as she was standing at the doorbell, this girl, Donna, who was like a year or so younger than her, says something to her, and it's just like, you know, Kelly tells her to shut up and it's fine. And, you know, the door opens, and depending on what of the eight witnesses you ask, either John Jay, who is 14, so he's a freshman in
high school. Yeah.
I don't know. I forgot. Yeah.
No, it's fine. He led high school.
Yeah. And then Robert, who is 22 and does nothing except, well, bad things.
I want to also just say, you know, he seems like kind of a shrimpy guy. Like, he's 5'3", you know.
Oh, my God. No one can talk enough about how short this guy is.
I know I can't, because he really, because he's such a dick, you know, and it's.
But I feel like that's what short men are. They're dicks.
Yeah, I have a couple friends who are short, and it's like they're not total dicks, not like going to do anything disgusting like this.
I know, but in general, there's a reason it's called like a Napoleon complex, you know?
Yeah, we do get a lot of talk about the Gullib family in the sense of mom, Elizabeth, who is obese and a hoarder.
Yeah.
Dad owns a gas station, Getty Gas Station, which I think is the one that is... I think I know where it
was. I think I know where it is, too. I can't decide if it's where 7-Eleven now is or if it's behind there. But either way, apparently Dad had named it Victoria's in honor of his wife, which is very nice. I'm talking about Tinia's, because both worked in auto.
Oh, really? The Tinias have... Is it Tinias or Tinias?
It's Tinias.
Okay, so yeah, I was not aware of that. I didn't look into it because I was kind of wondering why Kelly's dad was picking her up every day for school. Like, what did he do for a living? Definitely. And I thought maybe he developed iPhone applications like I do, but I think it was before the time.
No, but actually, they both... owned it, and then they both worked in that industry, and then which I wonder if that was another like underlying competition too. But
I don't know, this is more than enough bad drivers and people who don't take care of their cars in the five towns. I think that
this is true. There's an entire Facebook group dedicated to it.
Well, that's just the Parkers,
where I go on and yell at people to be nice every once in a while,
and everyone yells at you. It's like, why don't you just leave?
Exactly.
Stupid, go back to Florida.
Yeah, exactly. But no one knows it besides people I tell.
I tell everyone.
The other thing about the Gullib mom, Elizabeth, is several people mentioned that also, like, not only is she fat, and we soon learn a hoarder, mm-hmm. or as she puts it, a collector, but she also has a tendency to wear the same clothes for mm-hmm. several days, to which I say, fuck off. You know?
Sure.
I wear the same rotation of clothes because I don't leave my house. So there you go.
But maybe she didn't really keep herself. You know what? I don't know how important any of that is to the actual case.
I think it is, though. I think the important part is that there seemed to be no one looking out for these boys.
Okay. I mean, there's definitely some inkling. There's some hints that there's kind of a chaotic home life.
Right.
Yeah, right. And there are signs. I mean, we also learn that their eating schedule is kind of off.
They all eat at the same time, but in different rooms. Also, there's a 22-year-old son, a 14-year-old son, and then there's a daughter, Adele, who we barely hear about, but who was...
She escaped.
She escaped, exactly. And at the time, she was probably... 26, 27?
She was 23. She graduated from college, and she currently worked in Manhattan. She lived in Battery Park City.
Yeah, but she was an accountant living with her fiancé. So.
Yeah, so she escaped. She's like, you know what? Good luck, Gullibs. You know?
Yeah,
and I'm going to just say, as somebody who watched a lot of Hoarders, you know, a lot of this, I'm going to guess that maybe the hoarding must have been a little bit more chaotic than maybe even we're believing. And the reason why they all ate in their own spaces is because there was nowhere else to eat.
That might be an excellent call. I just think that Many studies have shown that families like eating dinner with your children is one of the best things you can do together.
Yeah, we never eat together. Thanksgiving. We try to.
We once in a while, but normally we're watching TV. But the idea of being is like that's when conversations take place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's important. But we, well, I can't, I talk my way through every movie, show, whatever. Which I know is shocking. We were watching Big Brother last night, and I started naming the people I would want in my Big Brother house. And the first one was the woman who does my eyebrows. So, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds funny.
Yeah, it is. So back to unfunny. So Kelly's not coming home. It's been X amount of time.
We don't know exactly, but we know that by the time people are starting to talk, it's a good, hour later?
Well, so I think, so Richie goes outside and he runs into a little boy whose name just escaped me. And I just imagine him to be like a stereotypical, like, you know, he's wearing a beanie hat and like bouncing a ball or whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently Kelly had babysat for him before. And the boy is like, watches Richie walk by. Richie goes to Nicole's house. And Nicole's like, no, she hasn't been here.
And this is a little 8-year-old, right? I mean, this is a kid who's just kind of wandering around the neighborhood. Nobody's kind of like, hey, you okay? Like, yeah, I'll help you look for her.
I mean, everyone's, these kids are living, this is like a pre-John Walsh, or Adam Walsh existence, you know?
No, isn't this after that all happened?
I'm saying, like, you know, Adam
this
Walsh.
This is a period of time where you should know better, I think.
I don't know. Everyone's working and doing the best they can. And
I know.
Like,
I'm not judging. I'm just simply saying that, of course, a lot of people would probably say, well, if I could do it over again, dummy, I would do it over. But what I'm just simply saying is that, to me, seeing an 8-year-old kind of go house to house looking for his sister is a little bit sad. And I know personally, I would hope that I would help him look for his sister, you know.
Yeah, I absolutely will. I'm very nosy and insert myself everywhere, you know that.
Yeah.
So then that same little boy from the 1950s in Lindsay's mind says, oh no, I saw her go to, you know, the Golub house. And then Donna, I guess, sticks her head out again and she's like, I saw her go to the Golub house too. And so really, it's like the children are the first investigators on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Richie goes, he knocks, no one answers. He goes home, he calls his dad. His dad says, well, knock again. And this time there's loud music playing and again, no one answers.
Surprised we didn't learn what kind of music. That's all.
I think it was probably awful music that you would have listened to and I would have hated.
Hey, no. So I'm just surprised they didn't take it as an opportunity to go listening to death metal or something
right,
like that.
Right. Well, it was loud rock music. Isn't that enough? You know?
I don't know.
So Richard Tinez, who has, by the way, grew up in Hewlett and went to Hewlett High School, you know, is told by his young son that Kelly was seen entering the Golub house. Father calls father, which now that we know they both work in the auto industry, makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that he and his wife, Elizabeth, hadn't been home, but they were told that Kelly hadn't been there. Now, I don't know who they were told by.
Yeah, like that's a weird one.
It is a weird line.
But she has not been there. I don't know where Elizabeth is at this point.
She works at a job, too.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, she apparently works at a job. I mean, they both work at – both wives work, and they're both working at – one works at a physician's office. I'm hoping that's not Elizabeth because that requires more cleanliness.
Here's a little bit of a side thing. Now, here's another thing with hoarders very often is that they're very clean in their day-to-day.
Interesting. I did not know that.
But they hide it. It's like when you go into pretty much any woman's car – and it's like, what the hell's going on in this car? You know?
Thank God. I have 4 yoga mats, like 6 empty bottles.
Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of like, but you meet you and you're like, oh, Lindsay's totally put together, you know? And
like, no one has ever said about that about look, me in my life.
It's like, go look in a glove compartment. It's all napkins, you know?
Right. Oh, totally. Right.
No. So here's the thing. They own gas stations. We know at least John Jay owns the Getty gas station, the local one, which is probably also a mechanic. Even back then, I would imagine that it would make a pretty good living. They also have a second income with Elizabeth.
Right.
I mean, Tignes. Yep. I'm reading the wrong things here. Golub's wife, Elizabeth, works, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Both wives work.
Yeah, I just looked at the wrong thing. So they have two incomes. I don't know. I just think...
Why don't they hire a babysitter? Because Kelly is a babysitter.
Yeah.
Like, other kids are paying... Like, I was babysitting at 12.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with a 12, 13-year-old babysitting and making their own money. But I'm talking about the Golubs. The Golubs own the Getty.
The Golubs make some good money, too. At one point, we find out that...
But hire a maid. Like, I don't know. Like, there are... I mean, I guess... Maybe by not bringing in the maid, maybe by having the hoarder behavior, we really are seeing that behind closed doors, things are really, really bad.
100%. 100%. I agree. And there was this one line in one of the podcasts I listened to that really irritated me because it was like, this case really proved that you don't know everything about your neighbors. Well, if you do,
I never claimed to.
Yeah, I don't want, well, I sort of do, but, you know, that's why God invented stalking. But yes, you know, Kelly misses her own birthday party, surprise birthday party.
Tinye's father doesn't, you know, comes home at 6. I mean, he probably thinks, like, she's going to be fine because 99% of the time, kids are fine.
Yeah.
And so he comes home and he starts searching for Kelly. And probably... within that 6 to 7 hour, you know, point, you know, that 1 hour, he starts really kind of freaking out. Because I know
right.
I would.
Right. And then the whole neighborhood is involved and is calling around. And in fact, at one point, I think it's Donna's mom, but one of the girls' moms calls Elizabeth Golub and says at like midnight and is like, you know, no one's seen Kelly. And so Elizabeth wakes up John and asks him if he saw her, and John says no and went back to sleep.
John Jr. Well, Jay. I don't know if it's Junior. I
Junior.
But is it Junior, or is it just maybe John James or something? Because people refer to him as John Jay.
Yeah, I think that's to distinguish him from his dad.
But even Tinier's parents, on a very current interview, referred to him as John Jay.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it kind of does if we're going to guess that you named your you pointed out who names their second-born son Junior.
Right. Unless you knew your first one was going to be a fuck-up.
Well, maybe it's also possible that, I mean, this is LARPing a little bit. You know, this is like fan fiction.
That's the first
fiction.
Thing I said, that I think that he's not the dad. Yeah.
But it also could be fan fiction that maybe somebody in their life died at the same period of time, and they, as a tribute, they named him, you know, after, you know.
I don't know. There's a special place in hell for people who keep recycling the same names. That's my...
Yeah, don't name your kid Mark. Jeez.
No, like you, your dad, your brother, your Scott has a first cousin whose name is also Scott. That's stupid.
I have a first cousin with the same exact first, middle, and last name. And it's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
It's and so I get stupid. His cable bill from time to time. But even though he lives over in New Jersey.
Well, don't pay it, I'll tell you that much.
I won't even talk to this jerk.
Good. That makes me feel much better.
No, so... But, yeah, I don't understand the name. The name is kind of questionable. It doesn't really make a difference, but it also kind of, it does a little bit, because it's like, what a weird kind of fact about your family.
Right. Like, did you just give up?
Was there adoption? You know, I don't know.
I don't either. I tried really hard to look it up, look for it, and I could not, I couldn't find evidence of another sperm donor in the picture.
Now, there were 8 people who claimed to have seen Kelly go into the Golub house. I don't buy it. Sorry.
I'm going to fight you on this one.
I'm going to say that you can go in and out of the house across the street from me all day long. I will not see it once. Even as a kid, I would not have noticed. Now, you think all 8, or maybe is there a chance that maybe only half?
I believe the 6-year-old.
All right. You think she saw, like, in the basement window and all that stuff?
So that I have a problem with, because I tried looking in basement windows, not on Horton Road, but on our walk yesterday.
Why would she look in the windows?
She's a kid playing in the yard. Maybe your ball went by there. I don't know, but I do know that, like, she was in therapy for years, yeah. And she still is, like, a big advocate of, like, they started a group on Facebook, the Kellyanne Tinya's group, and it's really, they want people to join, and if you have any information on the case and whatnot, but she's a huge advocate, in the group, and then in her, on her personal page, where she really is constantly trying to raise awareness. She was supposedly in therapy for many years because people didn't believe her, and fuck the world. Like, we've come a long time, and so hopefully we'd give some more,
what's your fondest memory of being when you were six? I don't remember a day.
Well, that's because you said fondest. I don't know.
Think of any memory.
I don't have a memory of when I was six, but I can guarantee you that if I saw someone stabbing someone.
I believe that she might have seen Kelly go into the house, or a house. And with all of the news and all that kind of stuff, you implant memories. We've seen it time and time again with implanting memories.
I thought about that as well. The
very impressionable at six.
The issue is that apparently, according to her grandma, she went, like, all that day she was acting strange. And in fact, the following day she told her dad, and her dad went over to Tinius's house and told them what.
Yeah.
What the daughter had seen. I believe she also said that she.
The grandma said that, right? So.
Said what?
The grandma told.
No. The girl didn't. Her name is Jackie. Jackie didn't tell grandma. Jackie was just acting strange, mm-hmm. But Jackie did tell. Her dad, and then dad went and told Richard Tinyas, and then the police chose not to. I mean, the police.
I wasn't there. I mean, clearly I wasn't there. I hate to say I don't believe a 6-year old, but I will say that maybe there's some level of truth there. I think that there is. I think there's something. But it's very sensational. I don't even know if she would understand at 6 years old what she was looking at if she's claiming to have seen these things.
You think they were poking penises at her instead of sticks?
I don't think a 6-year old would understand what's going on.
Maybe they were poking penises, not sticks?
I don't know. I just know that, eight people in a matter of what? 100 square feet?
I mean, it's not a very big block. It really isn't.
No. I mean, there's a total of, like, I mean, in the vicinity, if you're standing, like, right in front of the house, you could probably look around and see a total of maybe a dozen houses.
Yeah.
But absolutely. You're telling me that, 70% of those houses saw somebody go into one at the same time. It just seems like a bit much.
Like, all the parents would just go outside and play,
And look that way right now.
Right. Yeah. And
hey, it's Kelly.
One girl was sitting inside and just happened to see her. So either way, I think maybe some of them were false memories. Maybe some of them were true. But for some reason, I do believe the 6-year-old. Okay. And I think that we just weren't psychologically minded enough to.
It breaks my heart that she's going through such a struggle with dealing with it. Because I do believe she saw something. I just would have to take the account of a 6-year-old as a little bit.
What'd you do? What would you do? Hook her up to a lie detector test?
Yeah. That's the first thing I would do. And then I would say, well, you failed. And now you have to go home. And I would shame her.
And shame her for life.
I am so tired of lie detector tests. I want to create a poll where we just get rid of it. Give them all the Scientology.
We don't do anything with it anyway, so what's the difference?
Right, it's always like, well, it's inadmissible, but it's like, how much is that guy making? Like, how?
I know.
So this is your job, but it's useless.
It's useless. I kind of.
You know what? How about this? How about we just do tests where it's like, hold your breath, right?
Yeah.
Well, you could hold his breath for 2 minutes and 8 seconds.
Well,
what the hell
you,
does that prove?
It's like the Salem witch trials. I told you. We're going to throw you in a bag, throw you in the water. If you sink,
hey,
you're not a witch.
Did you know, and this is, has nothing to do with this, that 30 years before the Salem witch trials went on, we had the Long Island witch trials, which I'm hoping that we can discuss in the future.
I did not know that. Send me all the information immediately.
Yeah, it's a fascinating fact about Long Island, and it's another blemish on this wonderful little island that we live on.
Yeah, you're going to do that stat later.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, it's a fascinating rabbit hole to go down, and I think you'll thoroughly enjoy the history. But so back to Valley Stream.
Off your back for a few days because I'm stuck.
I love your research. Your research, it's always stellar.
It's excessive, so
stellar,
so
excessive.
Eventually, police ask to search the Golub home, and Elizabeth defers to. Her husband, she's like, well, my husband's not home yet. So her husband gets home from where he was boating in a Woodmere
yacht.
Yeah,
one of the yacht clubs.
Yeah, I didn't know what we had that, and I wouldn't expect, but whatever. So he was boating.
He's got money, I'm telling you. There is money in this family. They just don't spend it on their home.
No, like, no. I know where the money goes. Elizabeth's collecting things.
You think so? Like she's spending like 10 grand a week on garage sales?
Yeah. Just ask my husband how much I spend on flowers. Trust me.
Mm.
Yeah. So eventually police are given permission by John. They don't have a search warrant, but they've been given permission. This comes up later in trial, but it's a minimal point because they discover that the place is a mess, but the basement is the worst of it.
Yeah. They would use it like a garbage dump in a way. That's the way it was described. They would just kind of throw stuff down. I mean, were they hoping to fill it and then cover it in cement and say, hey, we don't have a basement?
You don't have a basement. We have a basement. But we have a basement, and we do throw stuff down there, but not like...
Not garbage. You know,
not dead bodies either.
Yeah, not, you know, but we do see, we get this grainy photograph of it that ran in Newsday, the wonderful Newsday. Newsday, the real victims here, right? The way they treated this entire case. And we see, like, there's a heavy bag there, and it's just, it's trashy. It's kind of like, it needs, like, a hoarder. Rake,
it needs to be set on fire. It needs to be set on fire and started again, like you do with like crops or something. So there's a closet. It takes police a while to get to the closet, and when they do get to the closet, they find a sleeping bag with a foot sticking out of it. Although I also have another.
Yeah, I have report. I have a slightly different report. Were they
half
to climb?
In a sleeping bag, half in a suitcase.
Well, no, that you know, I read that now that you're stating it. I read that like maybe 2 years ago, so that didn't come up again. But from what I understand, the police came to search the house. I don't believe they had a warrant. They just asked.
They didn't. That's what I just said.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was probably thinking of
not listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they find the body in the sleeping bag in garbage bags, or the body in garbage bags in a sleeping bag.
But the police, you know, one set of police start in the top, the other one in the bottom, and they meet in the middle, and they get to this closet, and they see that an officer had to climb into the closet, and they pulled out a bag, and when they unzipped it, a leg fell, like exposed itself.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. Now, what I don't understand is the officer also said that when he touched the skin, it moved, which shows that...
decomposure, yeah.
What does it show?
Decomposure.
Oh, okay. Now, all right, it's a sleeping bag, right? But a dead body doesn't retain heat. I mean, I'm just kind of, they're saying that because it was in there, it had been decomposing so quickly. I guess I don't understand how decomposition
occurs.
No, I mean, I understand it, but I didn't realize that it could occur so quickly. So, I mean, yeah, this is what, 12 hours later? This isn't very long. It's like 12 hours later, maybe.
No, it's like, it's a
whole day?
It's a day later, yeah.
Still, though, it's the middle. Well, I guess maybe if their house is kept warm, if it's a closet, it's very possible that the chimney was behind that wall. So it is possible that the area was kept very warm, and therefore the decomposition would be increased.
I'm sure I could find floor plans for the house if you really need it.
Yeah, I think Newsday ran one of those. They got a lot of playtime with this particular case.
Yeah, it's gross. Either way, yeah, it's gross. Awful. It's awful, and I'm tasking you with Well, I'll say this, and then you read the next. Her clothes were found nearby in three. They said attaché cases.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it's been so long since I heard that word, I had to look it up. They're just fucking briefcases. But who has three black briefcases?
No. You're talking about when briefcases, you mean like the kind like they would have in the movie Wall Street?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have one. I have a bunch of, I do have a lot of messenger bags. I tend to buy them.
Scott, yeah. But yeah. He also has two. He has a black briefcase and a brown one, and he never uses them. So.
Yeah. It's more of a prop than anything. The thing weighs like 10 pounds on its own.
This is true. So they found her clothes separate from her body, and take it away, Mark.
I don't know where you are in our notes. I mean, I could talk about...
Okay, so Kelly had...
No, I see. All right. Maybe I don't.
Look, right here.
I can't see your highlighting.
You can't?
No, I mean... Oh, there. Excuse me. Oh, I can see your highlighting. I'm sorry.
See? Pay attention.
So, all right. So the medical examiner and the blood specialist would later explain in court that she was given a brutal beating, and it was evidenced by her body. She must have been alive, and also I think that it's worth noting that she was also fully clothed at this time for 20 minutes. Now, I've been in a fight for 30 seconds, you know, and it feels
you
like...
You have? A little I'm bit impressed of a, by that.
Yeah, I mean... It's a whole other story. Like, I've gotten into like 30-second fights, and it feels
can
like
we make it into an episode. Sorry.
It happened in Croxy's Ale House, and this guy came
and
up
we
to
totally
me.
Will.
This guy came up to me, and yeah. I was with my friends, and he goes, "Why are you looking at my girlfriend?" And in Mark fashion, I look at her and go, "Why would I look at your girlfriend?" And he punched me, and then I had a bloody eyebrow. So, all right, that's my story. And that's we good. Both got pulled out and thrown out of the thing. And it was just like, I wasn't looking at her. I don't know. Why am I looking at your girlfriend anyway? All right.
Better than discussing the autopsy results. So I support that. Yeah.
But that wasn't even 30 seconds. And it felt like an eternity. It's 20 minutes. This poor kid is being beaten to death. They pull her hair. The bruising indicates that the beatings happened while she was alive because, of course, if your heart isn't pumping, there's no blood flow, so there's no bruising. And it's extremely, extremely cruel, and it's just... This is the part that gets everyone. We learned that there were bite marks on her body, on her neck, and she was beaten so badly that... I guess the autopsy revealed that her brain was even injured.
Yeah.
There was a bite on her buttocks, which partially the bites helped determine the person responsible for the killing. So it's just awful. We also include a World War I bayonet, which is a straight knife that you would attach to the front of a rifle to stab people with. And it's,
yeah, so Mark was kind enough to attach a picture to our notes because I could not figure out what we were talking about.
Yeah, it's like a bayonet is it's a cruel, harsh weapon if you're really thinking about what it's for. It's to stab somebody and then shoot them, or if you run out of ammo, you can just kill them with it. So we also learned that there was a piece of glass that was being used as I'm just going to say it as a torture device. Because, I mean, essentially what they're doing is they're torturing this kid. And there are two things that really upset me because we don't know why, right?
Yeah.
Why her? And what the hell? Like, this all seems to me to be drug fueled. Like, these are the actions of somebody on, like, PCP or somebody who, steroid rage, you know. These, and we do learn later that he did use steroids recreational because, well, he didn't have to bend down too far to pick up the weights, but he would pick up the weights.
We didn't get to so there's two suspects in that. They quickly narrow it down to two suspects.
Well, it's really, I mean, I think all in all, there's four people, right?
Or
in
five,
the house.
Yeah. But they quickly narrow it down and say they're are two of them, and that both John Jay and
Robert,
thank you, become immediate suspects. And
but there are two other guys, friends of John's.
Steve Baton and Glenn
McMahon.
And so, but he. This is where I'm so glad you brought up the weightlifting joke. Because, essentially there's a weird timeline that follows whereby, someone who says they're John calls Kelly.
This is Daily News timeline, right?
Yeah. The Daily News timeline. Right. So, 2:30, Kelly comes home from middle school. 3:00, John comes home from high school. 3:10, this one I feel like is the only solid time we have.
Because it's documented through phone records.
Right, through phone records. There's a phone call from Golub's home to Kelly's home. 3:15, this girl Donna, who lives super close, sees Kelly enter the Golub house. We spoke about the other neighbor who, you know,
Jacqueline,
said she saw John Jay let Kelly in. And then she says she later looked into the basement window, which Marsh doesn't believe.
Believe it. I believe she saw something. I just think that her story is extremely sensational. And apparently she viewed all of the actions.
Yeah, and I tried to look into some people's basement windows over the last few days.
Yeah.
It's really tough. Like, you can't see anything. I know I'm blind, but, like, I would have to be peering up against the window.
We have curtains on our basement windows.
So for those of you who may see in East Rockaway, actually, who might see me on your ring, think nothing of it.
It's just Lindsay. It's fine.
Actually, I had Hunter check first to make sure there were no, the houses that I was looking at didn't have rings.
It's just Hunter. It's fine.
Then at 3:45, John Jay and his friends leave the house to go back to the high school to play basketball with the two other friends. I'm going to say no. That's where I have a problem with it. This whole story loses it here.
Where he goes, where he leaves at 3:45?
You mean to play basketball? Mark, oh, wait, no. Okay. Did you ever smoke weed, ever?
Handful of times.
Okay. Did you ever smoke weed and go, let me go run? Let me go play basketball?
No. Ever. No.
Nor would anyone. This is like on the Leanne Rydell episode where we were talking about whether or not, like, it's a thing to, you know, get high on crack and then go to the gym.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you're right.
Definitely. When I smoke pot, I just want to sit around and either think stupid things or watch stupid things or, I mean, it's been a while since I smoked pot, but, like, No human in the face of the universe has ever gotten high and then decided to go play basketball.
But he could have also been like, let me just get the hell out of my house because my brother just savagely killed, or maybe I did, this kid while we were really high.
Right. No, you don't kill someone you're high. I don't even want to get my own.
Not when it's, maybe not weed, but maybe if there's something else. And I don't think there were tox screens done on anyone.
I saw no evidence of that either.
There was even a mention that there was no tox screen on Robert to determine whether he even had steroids in his system.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. Robert does admit to using drugs, but Robert's admission is like, once I used crack, which that's actually.
So let me stop you right there. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like you're a junkie, in my opinion. I mean, the guy admitted
to crack. You're a junkie. I mean, I feel very few people try crack once and are cool with it. So, you know.
In 1989, though, to smoke crack would be probably the most extreme thing, right? I mean, this is the period of crack is whack, right?
And where are you going to get it? You live in Valley Stream.
Right in Rockaway.
Okay.
Yeah, you go. I'm honestly, it's what? Yeah, no. 15 minutes away.
Right. So, fine. So, sorry, I strayed from the timeline. But so, John and his high friends leave the house, go back to the high school to play basketball. At 5 o'clock, his dad picks him up.
That's another thing. You don't want to be at home smoking. I mean, let's just say he was smoking weed, right? We don't know that if John Jay was involved in this. We just don't. But if he's at home smoking weed, the last thing he wants to do is have his dad come and find him home smoking weed.
He's already smoked, and it's like an hour and a half later. So that I don't have a problem with, except, like, the high school is, it's not that far. I mean, we did the walk today. It's not that far, but why, I mean, just walk back home. It's not like the family's waiting to have dinner together, you know?
But, you know, all right, so from Horton to the high school is, it's a bit of a walk, right? Not for kids. I mean, kids walk miles, especially in the 80s and 90s.
We did a 4 mile loop today. And so, mm-hmm. And on the way back, we went through, you know, via the high school. So, maybe a mile.
But I'm just surprised that there weren't other hangout spots in Gibson, like,
there was a pizza parks. Place. There was a pizza place.
But weren't there parks? I mean, I know they have a park now, but I don't know if that park existed.
I don't think it existed at the time.
It's definitely possible. I mean, I didn't really hang around Gibson too much as a kid, but I do remember one of the shadier areas is the overpass at the Long Island Railroad. That's where a lot of people would hang out.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that back, like, lot thing.
Well, but that's what got turned into the park.
Yeah, eventually. But that was all there when I was a kid.
Right, so they might have actually just gone there, and then at first they lied and said they went to play basketball, and they initially said they were playing Nintendo. Eventually, I guess someone was like, just come clean, you're on drugs, you know?
Yeah.
And so, 5 o'clock, you know, dad picks up John Jay, they come home. 5:30 to 6, mom, Elizabeth, arrives home and begins cooking a nice healthy dinner.
Probably macaroni with 2 sticks of butter or something, knowing that she's so obese.
With hot dogs.
With hot dogs. Oh my God, that's the worst.
Mom apparently goes to check on Robert. I don't know why. But he's face down asleep. I don't know why that's important. Mom's like, oh, no.
When I read that, I thought it was going to be like he's dead or something. I'm like, but that's not part of the story.
No, it would be better if that were the story.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So then at 7 o'clock, Richard starts calling his neighbors looking for his daughter. I'm guessing he doesn't call the Golubs because he would have no reason. And then, as I mentioned earlier, at midnight, a neighbor, I think it was Donna's mom, calls Elizabeth to tell her Kelly is missing.
No, she's at midnight. She's missing for about 7 hours.
Yeah.
And it's not like her to go and venture out. I'm going to guess the fourth precinct is like, look, now we have to, you know, really, not to say that they didn't take it seriously.
Is it the fourth precinct? I thought it was the second.
Our local thing is the fourth. I don't know if it was different back then.
Oh, I thought it was
the one that's over near the pediatrician. Not the pediatrician, but the orthodontist. Our orthodontist is there, and that's the only thing I really know. 7-Eleven.
Right.
Yeah, Grand that's Park. The fourth precinct. Yeah, Grand Park.
Okay, got you. And so they end up filing the report around 1 in the morning.
Okay.
But
like I said, like, I'm not saying that they didn't take it seriously, but it's like, at this point, it's not just she went to a friend's house and she's mad and she's not calling. It gets elevated to something serious at this point.
Right. Also, by the way, because I follow a huge amount of true crime cases, and depending on where you are is how soon they'll accept the...
Yeah, I always thought it was like 24 hours, but I wonder if it's different for kids.
It depends on the precinct. It depends on the town. So, I mean, I'm glad that they, you know, they accepted it.
I think our police, I think even today, they would take it seriously almost immediately. After, I mean, maybe not 5 hours, I'm going to bet you they're like, all right, look, we have to take it a little bit more seriously right now.
Right.
Because we are, you know, all right, our location is such a weird location when you look at the whole area that we live in. I mean, we're really right next to Queens. We have easy access into pretty much anywhere in the world if you really think about it. You can jump on the train and go into the middle of Jamaica if you want. We have full access to so much from where we specifically are. And at the same time, if you're driving out to Long Island, we're a 5-minute blip on a GPS.
Right.
So when a kid goes missing here, it's kind of, it's really crazy because they really could have gone anywhere.
Also, we get Facebook notices about missing kids like after 2 hours.
That's true. The whole Amber Alert system, which I think really has done a lot of good. And
you know, it would have done no good in this case, though.
Yeah, it really wouldn't have. I mean, sadly, this is a crime that happened immediately, it seems.
Yeah.
This is something where she went into the house and it was like
she was
right away.
20 minutes or something, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's just awful.
It really is. So the next day, Richard Tinez rings the Golub's bell asking about Kelly. And then shortly after that, the police arrived to question Elizabeth Golub and John Jay about Kelly's disappearance. Mm. Like we said, dad comes home. He gives police permission. They find the body. It's awful. You also left that part where it was like slit down the middle.
Oh, right. She had, see, I couldn't find so much evidence of any sexual abuse, but
there wasn't any. They think it was a sexual crime. They announced this in the court records, and then her mom loses her shit, and rightfully so. But
she had a slit. She had a cut between her, correct me if I'm wrong, between her anus and her vagina?
No, it was the whole length of the body.
It was
like from her pelvis, which I assume is either anus or vagina, all the way up to her neck.
Oh, that. Do you think they were trying to dismember?
Possibly. Is that how you start a dismemberment?
I have no idea. I don't even want to know.
Don't either.
But I'm assuming you start cutting. We do. Yeah. I learned on one of these things. I don't know how true this is. That Robert took some butchering type class or learned about how to, I guess, process an animal. And so he had some level of knowledge in it.
Right. You know, another problem I have is Robert was an NRA member. That's not the problem. But I believe he had a gun. So why was this such a...
How do we not hear about that, though?
I heard about it. I read it somewhere.
Yeah, I didn't. That didn't come up. It's not a popular opinion. It's not a popular fact, I guess. Because, you know, you would hear, like, there was a, you know, there was a firearm, but it wasn't used in this case.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying you didn't read it. I'm just simply saying
I
didn't.
No, I'm just going to have to start citing my sources better so I can answer like a, and sound, you know, all formal. But I remember reading that and being like, then maybe it wasn't wrong. I don't know. It makes it even more awful. So the police spend some time, 2 weeks exactly, looking at both boys. And then, they gave both John and Robert, or all four boys, I should say, they did give John and Robert the polygraph, and everyone passes the polygraph, he seems believable, his response seems accurate. Robert voluntarily submitted to 18 hours of interrogation.
Now, this is also 3 weeks later, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, yes. It's...
Well,
let's just
less
think.
Than 3 weeks. It's 2 weeks when they arrest, or yeah, when they arrest him. So,
well, it was March 22nd that Robert was asked to surrender. But when was the lie detector test given?
I think it was in the first week. I think they were getting pressure, as they should be, to pick someone, just pick someone and charge him. And it was tough because Steve Baton and Glenn McMahon were, like, you know, alibis, so, or participants, you know, deemed alibis. But John Jay, he bragged that he once killed a dog with a bayonet.
Yeah.
And supposedly once handcuffed a 6-year-old to a garage door as a prank.
Now, these are two things that are horrible, right?
And they're also very bad signs of shit to follow.
They're also stories. Like, do we know this really happened? You don't just kill a dog and get over, you know, and move on. You right, don't handcuff a 6-year-old
Robert
kid and not get your ass kicked.
Too. Robert killed a dog too. Apparently, everyone kills dogs, and it's just
people. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that he didn't do these things. I'm just saying, whose dog? Like, where did this happen? Like, how do we know?
I don't want to hang around someone who brags about killing a dog.
No. I'm just saying that. These aren't facts. Like, we don't know that these things even happen. All we know is that this poor kid was beaten and murdered in this, in this thing. And there's a lot of stories and a lot of bad things to talk about with Robert that are factual. I'm not saying he didn't do these things, but, you know, I heard that he stabbed the dog. Then it was like shooting the dog. And then,
well, one stabbed the dog, one shot a dog. Maybe it was the same dog. Maybe they used the bayonet attached to the gun.
Right.
They did it together, you know. Robert is absurdly honest with the cops. Well, honest. I mean, he quickly admits to the detectives that he'd used crack at one time, which we both call bullshit on.
He seemed like he was boasting, really.
Yeah. Also cocaine, smoked weed, and had at one time used a steroid. It's called Anadrol and testosterone to gain bulk. He probably was hoping to grow taller, but,
not going to happen, buddy.
No, but he had to stop taking steroids because he had a quote nervous stomach. Like, that's a weird thing for a killer. Nonetheless, police decide that ultimately, they decide that if we're following the timeline John laid out, that Robert's got to be the killer because he has, quote, exclusive opportunity, i.e. no one besides Robert had the chance to kill Kelly Ann. And also, it would have taken someone with super strength to do it. I'm only laughing because it's like, in some ways, it's like throwing shade at John. Like, yeah, that kid can't do it. And yet I would say false. How do you know that?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to say, I think.
Also, couldn't there have been more people there? Like,
Robert here's the thing. I mean, we saw Kelly go in, right?
Yep.
But does anybody see the other people leaving? Like, I mean, do we have eight witnesses to see people, like, you know, the three friends leave? And well,
the three people.
Yeah, John and the two friends. I mean, it's...
I know. And also, how come we never find out who they met at the park to play, or at the high school to play basketball?
They're a weed dealer. Like some Orthodox rich kid who deals, you know. And they had to go meet up with him. Sun's going down. It's Friday.
Yeah, I don't think they ever run out of weed in that house, something tells me.
Well, you got to go buy it. You know, another thing is Robert had voluntarily submitted to 18 hours of interrogation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to guess that they made him their best friend, you know, for the moment. And that's why he was boasting, like, he can bench press twice his weight, right? Wasn't he saying that? For a little guy, you know, that's not bad. Yeah,
it's okay to make fun of the killer. And we don't disagree that he's the killer. No one seems to. The question is, like, was he alone?
He admitted to it, and then he took it back, right?
Yeah, I don't care. He's, I mean...
pathetic.
Yeah.
One of the things that really bothers me, and, you know, this is a little bit more fast-forwarding to right now, is that the teenagers have to go through this every 24 months.
Yep. Because the next one is October 2021.
And I think that Crimes of Long Island podcast is going to do everything we can to kind of bring attention to the petitions to keep this animal behind bars. I'd love to reinstate the death penalty for this guy, but at the same time, I want him to kind of also rot,
Yeah, I like him rotting there.
It's just every 2 years. I mean, it's almost as though what I'm kind of hoping is that in 2 years, does he meet with the court or the appeal board? Yeah. And does he automatically get to, I mean, they could just literally let him out, right?
So apparently this, the last time it happened in 2019, he was approved for release. And then, you know, this wave of supporters showed up and got a petition signed. And
supporters to release him or to keep him?
No. Kellyanne supporters.
Okay. You right. never know. These days, you just never know whose side anyone is
totally
on.
Totally true. Think of the Night Stalker. Robert, spoiler alert, Robert's found guilty, sentenced to second-degree murder, 25 to life, up for parole every 2 years, like we said. And the thing that does it is the saliva. I'm going to say it's the DNA, and I'm going to say it, I don't know, it's saliva from the bite marks and the blood type, but that doesn't make super sense because both brothers were type O and like DNA in 1989 was shit.
I think the bite marks themselves, the physical bite marks, also matched.
Yes, but I don't know if they subpoenaed bite marks from John or anyone else.
Now, this was the first DNA...
New York case, yeah.
New York case, and it was so expensive at the time that they didn't continue it. Is that true?
They didn't go any further.
I heard that they got a match and they didn't keep testing, which I'm assuming there were other DNA samples found.
So, yeah. So I did read that there was a thumbprint and they could only do either the DNA or a print comparison,
mm-hmm.
which made me want to stab myself through the eyes or ears or whatever I heard it in. Because really a lot of the evidence didn't get thoroughly investigated.
Yeah. Now I read somewhere that there was semen found in one of the cases.
This so grosses me out. Yeah.
But they determined they being the investigators determined that the semen was not from the same period of time.
It was also on a shirt. And I know like boys use like socks or whatever, but like, it just really grosses me out. Like what was going on in this house? Who was sneaking down to like the dirty attic to masturbate?
Buy a goddamn tissue. I don't know what is wrong with these people. I don't know why there is semen in that suitcase. I don't care about the specifics. It's just,
to me, it's another sign of the lack of control supervision establishment in that house.
Also, whose semen?
It was Roberts.
Oh, was it? That was not in the thing I read.
Yeah, it was Roberts. It gets worse in a way. I mean, of course.
Thank you for listening to part one of this podcast. Part two will be coming out in a few days. Please look us up on Facebook by searching for the Crimes of Long Island podcast.